Good Tuesday evening. This is KBIA. It's 6:30. That can only mean one thing. It's time for Thinking Out Loud. My name is Trevor Harris. Each Tuesday at 6:30, my co-host Darren Helwidge and I take a listen to and a look at those people, places, and phenomena that make Mid-Missouri so unique. Coming up on this evening's program, we've got a preview of a September 23rd workshop happening at Powell Gardens just outside Kansas City. It's about how to convert non-native landscapes to prairie grasses and wildflowers. I asked several people, an informal survey of folks here in Columbia, if they'd ever been to Powell Gardens, and universally they said, I've heard of it, I'd like to go, but I've never been there. That was my answer as well until last week when I took a drive. I headed west to Powell Gardens. It's located on Highway 50, about an hour and 45 minutes west of Jefferson City between Warrensburg and Lee Summit. Powell Gardens bills itself as Kansas City's Botanical Garden, and Alan Branhagen is the head of gardens there. I asked him to give us a little history on Powell Gardens, how long it had been there, and what they were trying to accomplish there at the 900-acre property located about 30 miles east of Kansas City.
Yes, it first started in conjunction with the University of Missouri, and then after 2 years became a 100% private organization, not-for-profit over here. So it's a relatively young garden, but has amassed a pretty large collection of plants, probably one of the five largest in the Midwest, with 20,000 accessions of plants. So that's basically a museum record of every plant we bring in. We keep records of it, just like a museum curates its artwork. The Powell family originated in North Missouri, and George Powell Sr. Started Yellow Freight, and the money that they made, they wanted to give back to the greater Kansas City community. And in the 80s, Kansas City was one of the largest metropolitan areas in the country without a major botanical garden, so they decided to give this as a gift back to the community as a botanic garden, and to me have done a beautiful job in a short period of time, hiring great, we've got great architecture by Faye Jones here, all the landscape. It started with a master plan and followed through it this entire time, so it's really well planned through what used to be called environmental planning and design out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, which does a lot of work around the country with botanic gardens. So it's a growing organization and still growing. Powell Gardens has about 20 acres of native prairie remnants that vary from fairly degraded to higher quality. And usually you look at the structure, though Mike can, as the biologist, can tell you more about that. And also what species are there. Actually, almost all native species have a conservation efficient? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, there's a term that we use in biology that a coefficient of its remnant dependence.
That's Mike Leahy. He's the director of the Natural Areas Program with the Missouri Department of Conservation.
Certain plant species, such as lead plant or purple pale coneflower, rattlesnake master, some of these plant species don't spontaneously occur in our landscape. They're usually only found in unplowed prairie remnants, or they could be in forests that haven't been plowed. When you disrupt that original soil structure, you get rid of the mycorrhizae, the fungi, and the relationships with the plant species that you don't find otherwise. And so those plants in some of these remnant prairies are really great resources. And then typically the insect species and those pollinators are usually have a lot of close affinities and relationships to the plant species. And so they're really great models for native landscaping too, and great and sources of seeds for those landscapes. So yeah, these remnant dependent species are kind of we as humans make them higher quality than things like ragweed or other plants that, while important in the environment as a whole, you can find them anywhere from your backyard to even a high quality prairie that's never been plowed before. It's a number from 0 to 10 that we give to certain plant species, and it's qualitative. But it's numbers like if a plant species is given a 10, it means it's really only found in remnant prairie. So it might be something like a western prairie fringe orchid that you're only going to find in a handful of spots left in Missouri, versus a plant species like common ragweed or elm species that you can find in, you know, urban vacant lots, but you can also find those same plant species in high quality areas. So certain plant species, and the same for some insect and reptile amphibian species, they're only found like in certain places in our landscape. So they're pretty irreplaceable elements of our natural heritage.
And so Powell has, you said, 20 acres of unplowed. So it's an island.
Yeah, there. I call it's actually a series, all connected on a high ridge here, and I consider it a little prairie archipelago, but they're somewhat linked, and we're trying to remove trees and brush in between and try to link them and make it a larger habitat. We do have a few species that require prairies, pretty much like the Bisis skipper and the cross-lined skipper are two butterflies, and they actually have colonize the gardens as well, so that's kind of interesting. Usually those are prairie habitat-restricted species, so we don't have some, you know, it's not large enough for prairie chickens or, you know, Regal fritillaria. I occasionally see here, that's another really good indicator of some prairie remnant, and a butterfly that is in much more critical stage in its life than the monarch, but it doesn't get depressed, and it really is a phenomenal butterfly. That western Missouri and eastern Kansas probably have the best populations left in the country, and east of the Mississippi, it's virtually gone. I think there's one population on the east coast and a few in Wisconsin and Illinois, and that's it, east of the Mississippi.
I've read before that islands are incredibly environmentally fragile because their hierarchy of species have just evolved together, and you introduce snakes and there go all the birds or whatever they predate on. Are these prairie remnants, I would think they're similarly fragile.
Very much so. And that's probably why we don't have the regal fritillaries, because of all the edge and edge habitat. If we had a larger contiguous block, I think we'd have much better chance of survival. I don't know if Mike, you want to...
Sure, I'll add in. But yeah, the smaller the remnant gets, the more edge it has, like Alan was saying, and the more susceptible to non-native exotic species like Sericea lespidiza or tall fescue start to invade. And then you lose, once a population gets small enough, it starts inbreeding and you don't have the same genetics that you used to have. And so it eventually gets to a point where that population crashes and goes away.
That's Mike Leahy from the Missouri Department of Conservation talking about the plight of prairie species on remnant properties located in the Show Me State. Leahy and Alan Branhagen are two of the panelists at the Missouri Prairie Foundation's September 23rd Grow Native Workshop happening at Powell Gardens. The topic, converting non-native landscapes to prairie grasses and wildflowers. Here, Mike Leahy talked about why that matters.
Yeah, by converting urban landscapes to more native plants, you get the benefit of having more habitat for pollinators. For example, like at our house in Jefferson City, Missouri, we planted a pipe vine, and within a year we had pipe vine swallowtail caterpillars laying eggs and reproducing on our pipe vine, which is pretty amazing. And so you get things like that in urban areas, even in the heart of Kansas City or St. Louis, where by planting these native plants, you end up attracting the native insects that depend on the plants. Plus, using the native plants, eventually, during drought periods, you're going to be using less water. The native plants don't require the same fertilizer inputs. You're going to be benefiting water quality. And then there's the aesthetic and the educational benefits, too, of native plants.
Someone else who knows about the benefits of native plantings for native pollinators and other species is Alan Branhagen. He's the head of gardens at Kansas City's Powell Gardens, which is located about 30 miles east of Kansas City on Highway 50 between Lee's Summit and Warrensburg, Missouri.
Using more native plants is just it's a wiser use of our resources from water and fertilizer. And, yeah, you are improving water quality with that. And the one thing is it's kind of a new trend, and a lot of people are having a little bit of trouble accepting the aesthetic, though it is changing quickly. It's kind of an acquired taste, and I liken it to, I shouldn't say this, but in artists, when the Impressionists first started their Impressionist style, the, you know, art community was just aghast with it. And now it's kind of the same thing with traditional styles of landscape that you see in most of suburbia. When they start to see these more natural landscapes, people are just like, it's foreign to them, even though it's the indigenous stuff that used to grow here. It's the things we really should celebrate. And I think more and more people are starting to understand, you know, that it's a little more rough look, and if you have a clean edge and you sign it and you plant a lot of more colorful perennials and things through the season, I think people start to get it and understand what it's about. And I really feel that, you know, in the future we will look at it and that will become the norm. We will think, wow, that's a beautiful style. It makes a lot of sense here.
Are we going to shame our neighbors, culturally shame our neighbors who have sprinkler systems on timers?
It's kind of happening, though right now it's still the other way. There's a lot of people fighting weed ordinances and that kind of thing so that they can even have this kind of landscape. A lot of times you have to get even a permit in some settings. Luckily, where I moved, I live in a rural subdivision next to Powell Gardens, and that was the first thing I read with the Homeowners Association. Can you have a natural landscape? Do you have to mow everything and that kind of thing? And luckily, you can have a house set right in the woods with no turf if you want where I live. So it works really well for me, and I do practice what I preach. I mean, I have a 3-acre property with very small amount of lawn. Really, that's what's utilized. Most of it's natural. Every little bit helps. Even if someone starts with a perennial border that adds these plants, I think you are starting it in the right direction. And usually I start to tell people, you know, start around the edge of your property, keep your lawn in the center, and then always keep a clean edge, and then just make it larger and larger from that component. And of course, if we're talking just prairie, you know, we're talking full sun too. So, and this movement also goes into, you know, woodland and that kind of thing. And in that case, you know, I always say, you know, connect the areas beneath your trees. Start your woodland garden, stop mowing underneath your trees, and start there.
What is a solid source for the kind of plants you're talking about? Because Mike frowns on when I take a shovel to a conservation area and start digging plants that I like.
That's right. Well, we are really lucky in this area to have the Grow Native program, which is under the Missouri Prairie Foundation. And you can go to grownative.org, the website, and it will link you to all the Grow Native nurseries in the state and where you can go pick up your native plants. So it's as easy as that.
Are there books or websites that are just essential? Like if I was going to take an independent study in Native Plants 101, what's got to be on my bookshelf or on my website reading list?
Yes, I've got a new book that's coming out this fall. It'll be available in November, Native Plants of the Midwest. And Powell Gardens has, you know, on our website, you know, you can, you know, we do share lists of things that do really well. And also, don't forget, you know, we also have a list of what we consider plants that you should not plant over here in western Missouri and eastern Kansas, the invasive species. And actually, every single plant we accession here at Powell Gardens, we monitor it, what it does in the gardens. And as soon as something starts to go beyond, you know, spread where we see it in the meadow or the woods, we either delete it or we, you know, right now we're working with actually Quinn, one of our other speakers, and this new task force for Missouri on invasive species, so they get a handle on what we should be concerned about for the future as well.
Tell me about a plant that's out there and people commonly buy that you really wish they wouldn't.
First thing is the Calorie Pear group. That's the Bradford pear is what most people know that by, but anything that is Pyrus calariana, any of the cultivars, to me is one of the most invasive species right now, and it's just shocking that nurseries still sell it because it is that bad, and I don't know how we're going to really manage it. We have none in our collections at Powell Gardens. We deaccessioned it 20 years ago when we first started to see that it was going to be problematic.
So I'm ignorant. So what happens with the Calorie Pear? Well, I planted 3 in my yard or 4 in my yard, and they bloom, and they smell funky. And
they smell funky, that's yes. Right. It's like, why do you want that stinky old thing? Anyway.
So what happens?
Well, it was actually promoted, I think, by USDA as a great plant. And then it was really the cultivar Bradford. And anyone who knows fruit trees, pears are not self-fertile. And so it didn't produce any little pears and didn't spread. And then they learned as Bradford pear got to be a larger tree, it gets bad branching structure. And then the first ice storm and windstorm we have, it all falls apart. So what they did was they selected new, improved varieties of Bradford pear, like Chanticleer and Cleveland Select and White Spire, that don't split up. Well, little did they realize, when you put those in the landscape, now you have pollinators for the Bradford pear. So they all cross-pollinate quite readily now, and they all produce these little bite-sized fruits that Purina could sell as starling chow. European starling's an invasive bird. It's their favorite food on the planet, and they, you know, snarf them down in the fall, fly far and wide, dispersing the seeds all over the landscape, and we've got quite a Bradford or Calvary pear forest community going in around Kansas City and heading this way. So,
well, and outside of Columbia and Jefferson, you know, you've got that Calvary pear zone going west, east, north, and south of Jefferson City and Columbia, and most of the urban areas in the state, even smaller towns where we've planted a lot of these trees. And then, like Alan was saying, the starlings do a good job of spreading them. And so you have these old fields that are just becoming invaded by, and even forest communities and gaps in forests that are getting invaded by that particular species.
What's a good replacement for a Calvary pear or a Bradford pear? If I'm hearing this and I've become educated and I want to remove them.
Well, there's no perfect replacement. A lot of people like that form, you know, that kind of popsicle form in the tree. But we have a lot of wonderful natives. The service berries are, you know, early blooming, white flowering. And then you get the fruits, which are also edible and great for wildlife in late spring, early summer. And, you know, just great fall color, a tremendous tree. I mean, any of the native trees with white flowers are far better. We've got several species of wild plums, even the white flowering, our state tree native flowering dogwood. Please consider planting those instead of Calvary pear.
That was Director of Gardens Alan Branhagen, he from Kansas City's Powell Gardens. Branhagen and Mike Leahy from the Missouri Department of Conservation are two of the speakers on the September 23rd Grow Native Workshop sponsored by the Missouri Prairie Foundation on converting non-native landscapes to prairie, grasses, and wildflowers. If you're a little bit like me, you probably spend some time digging in the dirt and farming your yard, putting in vegetables that you can eat, and also natives for your enjoyment and for the benefit of native pollinators. Here, Alan Branhagen and Mike Leahy, those two speakers on the September 23rd Grow Native Workshop, talk about how to manage fescue in the home landscape.
Fescue put in again as a pasture grass here, and yeah, it's just very challenging. And you will learn at this workshop on how to control that. And in one of our plantings, a late spring burn has completely eradicated it because it greens up early, and then we get a really hot fire, and we have just that's out of there. Unfortunately, Sericea doesn't, you know, just makes the seeds germinate more, so that doesn't work. And that there are aggressive native species. Red cedar is one, though. It doesn't bother me. It's great for wildlife, and it's so easy to control. You just burn it or cut it off, and it's dead. To me, the most challenging native is persimmon because it suckers all over, seeds all over. You cut it off, it sprouts up 10 more. In our prairie remnants, it's probably our most challenging aggressive native, though we don't want to eradicate persimmons. It's part of our natural woodland here and good for wildlife and insects and so on. So, most people never even notice what's in bloom. And I usually notice it in bloom because you can hear it. There are that many pollinators in a persimmon in bloom. It just buzzes with pollinators. So it's something we want, but not everywhere.
That's Alan Branhagen talking about striking a balance between native plants that do well and native plants that can take over a home landscape. Branhagen and Mike Leahy from the Missouri Department of Conservation are two of the speakers they'll be presenting at the September 23rd Grow Native Workshop at Powell Gardens, just outside of Kansas City. The topic, converting non-native landscapes to prairie, grasses, and wildflowers. You can find more details about that workshop online at moprairie.org.